The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Meditation doesn't have to be a solo practice. Meditation is more fun with friends. Looking for a way to drop in and hang out at the same time? Join us online at Omega Institute for a meditation party with self-proclaimed meditation nerds Dan Harris, host of the 10% Happier podcast, Sebene Selassie, and Jeff Warren. This three-day retreat will stream live from Omega's Hudson Valley campus May 17th to 19th. Don't miss the party. Reserve your spot at eomega.org/party today.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Learn how to eat better, get healthy, and help animals. Welcome to Main Street Vegan with your host, Victoria Moran.
I want to take you back in time, maybe back before you were born. It's summertime, 1984. I am at Vegetarian Summerfest, sitting in a hallway with my 16-month-old baby. And a very tall man walked past, and someone leaned over and whispered to me, "That's a medical doctor." And I remember thinking, we have a medical doctor at a vegan event? Everything is going to change now. Well, pretty much everything has changed. But Dr. Michael Clapper was the first MD I ever saw to walk into one of our events. And guess what? Today, he is the guest on this program. Hi, everybody. I'm Victoria Moran, your host for the Main Street Vegan program. And I am so honored to be bringing onto the show today Dr. Michael Clapper. I don't know that he was the first American medical doctor in the 20th century to be vegan, but he was certainly one of the first, and he has been working for this cause ever since. Michael Clapper, MD, is director of the Moving Medicine Forward Initiative. He is leading this initiative aimed at improving the health of our population by providing nutrition education in medical schools. Dr. Clapper brings to Moving Medicine Forward 46 years as a primary care physician, 35 of which have centered upon applying plant-based nutrition to arrest and often reverse chronic disease. A longtime radio host and a pilot, Dr. Clapper has served as nutrition advisor to NASA's programs for space colonists on the moon and Mars and on the Nutrition Task Force of the American Medical Students Association. Welcome, Dr. Clapper.
Thank you, Victoria. It's great to be with you and your listeners. I've wanted to do this podcast for a long time, and it's nice that it's finally here. Good to hear your voice.
It is so nice. And you are in upstate New York, where you were just at a conference about climate and food?
Oh, absolutely. It was a remarkable conference. The issue of our food choices driving the global warming phenomenon is coming to the surface big time, and we have we had a stellar collection of experts, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, so Nelson Campbell was here, Dr. Silesh Rao, a whole group of environmentalists, Jody Kass, real movers and shakers in the movement. And we spent 2.5 days brainstorming on how we can get the message across to everyone, basically, and it's quite an audience, that it's time for us as individuals for our health, but more importantly, as a species, to evolve our diets to ones based really on plants, if not exclusively, almost for sure. So that's quite a task ahead of us, but we have no choice. The world is getting warmer and warmer. I just read in Archangel on the Arctic Circle yesterday, it was 84 degrees, and that's frightening. And so it's time for everyone to get serious about this. If we all work together, then we can do a lot to make things better.
I love it that this conference happened, and I love all those people whose names you mentioned. But I almost wish you had named a lot of people that I've never heard of, because I do feel that the conventional environmental world is very, very slow to come on board with the message about food choices. What are you seeing?
Yes, I have to agree with you. Oh, there were 20 people in attendance that I did not mention, and I can tell you some of them. Aaron Beal from Johns Hopkins Climate Center, lovely man, Lassie Behrens from an organization called 50 by 40, and that's to reduce livestock population on this planet 50% by 2040. We had Jim Lehner from the Earth Legal Defense Fund. We had several attorneys, climate scientists. There were quite a number of folks. And we had four physicians, Dr. Scott Stoll, Dr. Ron Weiss, Dr. Diego Poneman from the Somos Movement in New York City.
Yeah, he's in my neighborhood.
Yes, right. So he was there because we've got to get the people understanding how important this is for them as individuals to evolve to a plant-based diet. So it was quite lively, but to somehow get this message across without alienating all the farmers and ranchers and food processors whose lives are dependent upon producing animal flesh. That is quite a task, but we're all on the same planet. We've got to make some kind of accommodation. This is not going to be easy. The vested interests want to keep things going as they are, but the way things are going as they are, the world is getting hotter and hotter, and I fear this summer is going to be just hellacious. Well, we're already getting signs of that from the temperatures we're already seeing. The Australians just coming out of their summer had the hottest summer on record, and I think we're going to see blazing heat. And we have this record snowfall this winter, but half of it's gone already. It's melting on the mountainsides very, very fast because it's so hot. And so they're talking about record droughts. I think this is going to be the summer that's going to get everybody's attention, even the climate deniers and the global warming skeptics. I think by the time this summer is over, they're going to realize we've got a major problem and we're behind the curve. Hopefully there's still time to stabilize the spaceship we're on.
Yes. And what specific objectives, what kinds of activities and changes and incremental changes have you seen that perhaps the farming, ranching, food processing people might be open to? Do we have any sort of crack in a door?
It's going to take a major leap of vision and imagination. Could this be done? Absolutely. This could be. The human race realized that large-scale animal agriculture is the driving force behind the global warming phenomenon we're facing. The major environmental destructive processes, deforestation, soil erosion, water pollution, water depletion, they're all driven by our insatiable lust for animal tissue on our plates. That's why the forests are being cut down. The soils of the Midwest are eroding into the rivers off corn and soybean and alfalfa fields who grow animal fodder for meat. Most water is used to irrigate corn, soybeans, and alfalfa in North America. Most water is polluted by herbicides and pesticides and manure running off of feedlots. And the major of everyone, the public, to change what they put in their shopping basket, what they order in the restaurant has to change. And again, the political and economic issues of the economics involved also have to change as well. We got a lot of work. We've got a big mountain to climb. But with the internet and young people and goodwill and a little desperation, you know, we might just pull it out. But I'm concerned. Every little child I see being pushed in a stroller, I want to run up and apologize for what we've done to their world, and then to promise to do the best I can to leave them a livable world. We've really caused a lot of damage here. We've got to stop damaging and start healing. So that's what this conference was about.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for letting us in on all of that. So, Michael, I know that when you were a young resident, I believe it was, or intern, you witnessed a surgery that changed how you looked at food. Can you tell us that story?
Oh, yes. I was a resident in anesthesiology. I was going to be an anesthesiologist, and I was on the cardiovascular anesthesia service at Vancouver General Hospital, and I'm day after day putting people to sleep and watching surgeons open up the chest of these people and their arteries and pull this yellow, greasy guck out of their arteries called atherosclerosis. And I was saying, what is that stuff? And one night, I'm making my preoperative rounds at the hospital to see my patients for upcoming surgery. And back then, at Vancouver General, if you came in a couple days before surgery for preoperative testing, et cetera, and you weren't in desperate physical straits, they would give you a day pass to go out with your family before you had the surgery. And I'm making rounds one evening in the hospital, and a patient had come in who had been out on a day pass scheduled for a bypass in 2 days. And the nurse came up to me and said, this man, Mr. Phillips, needs some blood tests drawn. He wasn't in the room when the tech came by. Would I mind drawing the blood? I said, sure. So I drew a couple of tubes of blood, put them out at the nurse's station while I finished the rounds on other patients. And as I came by to pick up the blood tubes to take them down to the lab, I looked at the blood tubes and I did a double take. Normally, when you draw blood into a glass tube, the red clot settles to the bottom and the liquid part of the serum rises up to the top. And normally it's crystal clear. You can read newsprint through normal serum. This man's serum was far from clear. It was milky white. It looked like Elmer's glue. It stuck to the sides of the tube when I shook it. I went back to his bed. I said, Mr. Phillips, when you were out with your family, did you stop and eat before you came back? He said, yes. I said, what did you have? He said, oh, I had a cheeseburger and a milkshake. And when he said that, I realized what I was looking at was all the fat in the burger, the butter fat in the cheese, the egg yolk and the mayonnaise, the vegetable oil and the fries, all this fat had oozed out into his blood and turned this man's blood fatty. It's called lipemia, and it happens every time you eat a fatty meal. Well, this was pretty dramatic. You know, everybody has this wave of fat. You don't see it, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Everybody has a wave of fat that goes through their bloodstream after you eat a meal like that. How can you not? Where's the fat going to go? But we don't feel it. We don't see it. You may feel greasy after you eat a pizza or a burger. And if you do, it's because you really are, actually. That fat really is flowing through your system. And during that time, it's doing great damage. It's injuring the walls of our arteries, setting us up for atherosclerotic plaque. It's, as it flows through the fat stores on our belly, it sticks there, makes us more obese. As it flows through our muscles, it clogs up our insulin receptors, setting us up for diabetes. This is not a good thing. And people do this three times a day, bacon and eggs for breakfast, and a cheeseburger for lunch, and fried chicken for dinner, ice cream for dessert. We're sending wave after wave of fat through our bloodstream month after month, year after year. Well, you do that for 20, 30, 40 years, so you can't be shocked when things start clogging up. And a couple days later, we took him down to the operating room. I put him to sleep, and I saw exactly what that kind of eating style did. The surgeon opened up his arteries, and they and out comes this yellow, slithery stuff that when the surgeon pulled it out, it kind of shimmered. And I thought to myself, man, that stuff looks like chicken fat. And a little voice on my shoulder said, there's a good reason why it looks like chicken fat, doctor. It is chicken fat and cow fat and pig fat, the fat of every other slow animal that was walking past this man's table when he had a fork in his hand. And this really made quite an impression. I was aware of the disease, and there were already studies in the medical literature describing this and showing that a plant-based diet will melt this plaque away. And this is very important, as Dr. Esselstyn was to prove later. But this made an impression on me. My dad died of clogged arteries. At that time, he was already showing sign of angina and a blue leg. And I knew I was going to be laying on that operating table with that Stryker saw going up my sternum. And I didn't want that. I saw those folks when they woke up in the recovery room. I didn't want to be one of them. And so I changed my diet. I had a couple other clues that it was time to stop eating animals. And when I did, it was just remarkable. Boy, my body loved a plant-based diet. It was oatmeal and fruit for breakfast and lunches and dinners of colorful salads and hearty vegetable soups and steamed veggies and bean chilies and fruits for dessert. It was not a diet of deprivation. But boy, within 12 weeks, a 20-pound spare tire of fat melted off my waist. My high blood pressure went to normal. My high cholesterol went to normal. And I felt great waking up in a nice, lean, light body every day. So there was no turning back for me. And in fact, I was so impressed that I realized I didn't want to be an anesthesiologist. I wanted to, didn't want to spend my rest of my career putting people to sleep. I'd rather go back to general practice and help them wake up. So I did. And I've been the happiest doctor, happiest GP I know, because my patients get healthy. And now I know what to tell them. And the people adopt this kind of diet and they get healthy too. So it was quite a day of transformation in the operating room. And I haven't looked back since.
Well, God bless Mr. Phillips.
Indeed.
It's amazing
Indeed.
How we can... Oh, we influence people and don't know where
that's going to
go.
You never know. You never know.
So looking back on mm-hmm. all these years in medicine, all these years as a vegan, mm-hmm. what do you know now that you didn't know 10 years, 20 years ago, 30 years ago?
Oh, my. Well, as I said, how beautifully our human body runs on a whole food plant-based diet. And it's something that I never really thought about, but we have basically the same digestive system that our gorilla and bonobo cousins have. And they're up in the trees eating leaves and fruits. And they eat a tremendous amount of herbage every day and pass these lovely soft stools. And I've never had a gorilla in the office with hemorrhoids or diverticulosis. The plant eaters seem to do quite well. But seriously, a whole food plant-based diet, and when I say whole food, you can't do this on granola bars and energy drinks and Oreo cookies. This has to be real live food, like it grew out of the garden. But if you keep your belly full of that kind of whole plant food, the body just thrives. And you can't hold obesity on it. You wind up with a lean, healthy body with normal blood pressures and normal blood sugars. So as a therapeutic tool for patients who come into my office with obesity and diabetes and clogged arteries and sore joints, the one thing that I indelibly learned was the therapeutic power of this kind of diet. You get someone on this really whole food plant-based diet, and within days, the obesity starts to melt away, and the arteries open up, and the high blood pressure comes down, and the insulin receptors clear out, and the diabetes goes away, and the joints stop hurting, and the psoriatic skin clears up, and the asthmatic lungs wheeze less, the migraine headaches go away, the colitis settles down. And they turn into normal, healthy people who don't need a lot of pills and potions and procedures. And I tell my patients, I want to see you in two places, in two places only, at the health food store where you're buying your tempeh, and on the bike path where I'll wave to you. That's not the only place I really want to see you, folks. And I'm pretty much serious when I say that, because you really shouldn't need to see your doctor on a regular basis if you're really running your body on a proper fuel. So it's the magic of health that appears when people eat the diet that we really designed to consume.
So we know that a lot of the benefits come from not having the animal foods. You've talked right. about the fat. We know that animal protein turns on cancer genes. But what about plants? Mm-hmm. What do they do?
Oh, my. You can spend a lifetime. Yeah, many of my colleagues in nutritional biochemistry do exactly that. You know, the biochemistry, the physiology of what plants do in our body, it's like fractals. The closer you look, the more it breaks up into smaller and smaller pieces. And each one is a shiny little mystery and a clue into how this wonderful universe and this amazing body works. And I seriously have colleagues who just study the fats, the lipids in plants, the omega-3s, the omega-6s, and omega-9s, et cetera, and all the things they do, from turning off inflammation to making our cell membranes strong to regulating our hormone levels. Again, you can spend days and days just cataloging the effects of these molecules from the fat world. Then you turn to, as you said, the proteins, and every one of the amino acids that makes up these proteins has a different fate, and they are involved in different reactions from immunity to cell reproduction to gene expression. The carbohydrate metabolism, well, we are sugar-burning organisms. Despite all the craziness out there about paleo diets and keto diets and all of that, and people are don't want to eat those carbs. Yes, you want to eat those carbohydrates. We are carbohydrate-burning organisms. Our mitochondria burn carbohydrates. Fat is an emergency fuel. And it's okay to burn it for a few days, a week or so, to be in ketosis, but don't want to stay in ketosis week after week. It's an emergency state. Then people need to realize that whole plants-based diet is a high carbohydrate diet, because nature makes plants out of carbohydrates. That's what the leaves and stems and roots are made of, and it's okay to eat them. They will not turn into fat. They cannot turn into fat, the pure carbohydrates, when eaten on their own. And for that reason, the carbohydrates not only are the fuel we burn, but the cells throw sugars back and forth as signaling molecules to turn reactions on and off. Again, the closer you look, the more you see. So what do plants do? They run this astoundingly complex body beautifully. And again, I've been vegan for 38 years now and haven't needed to eat any animals, and I work just fine. I run 5 miles and feel great. So plants do, you know, pick something wonderful in the body and plants do it.
No, that's beautiful. And it is true, when you've seen people do this for many, many years, it actually seems to work. Who'd have thought it?
Indeed. But every gorilla knows that, every giraffe knows that. That's the point. We are meant to run on plants.
So we do have a break coming up in just a minute, and I don't want to get you started on some wonderful other topic. Okay. But I am interested. We know about heart disease. We know that this is the only way that has ever been shown to actually reverse that. Absolutely. We know there's some good information about blood pressure and Alzheimer's and certain cancers. It's seeming that people are coming up curing autoimmune disease, all kinds of things. And then there are other people saying, just slow down a minute. You don't want to make this a panacea. It's still Earth. People get sick. Let's not overpromise. So I'm going to say, let's just hold that until after the break, which I do believe is coming up in 20 seconds. And then we'll come back and talk more with this remarkable human being, Dr. Michael Klepper. If you didn't know him yet, don't you love him already? He's very, very easy to love. And what he's doing now, moving medicine forward, means that he's not just talking to vegans and vegetarians and coming on shows like this one. He is out there where the doctors of the future are being trained. And when he says he's teaching them nutrition, he's not teaching them nutrition. He's teaching them this. He's teaching them the truth about food and what it does to our bodies. More after the break.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach around the world, we depend on the generosity of listeners like you. If you enjoy the programming, please make your donation today by going to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Teachable Moment with Reverend Ogun Holder, taken from a talk at Unity on the River in Amesbury, Massachusetts.
Vulnerability is very uncomfortable. But as we know from so many teachings by so many people and from our own experience, the only way we will ever experience true connection is to be vulnerable, to be open, and to say, but we say to ourselves, but when we're vulnerable, we risk being hurt. Well, you only risk being hurt, again, if you don't get a full understanding of how love works. Nothing and no one can hurt you. Nothing and no one is against you. And everything that happens in your life, as I always say, and I will always say, so if I keep saying it and you keep hearing it and you get tired of me hearing it, I apologize. But everything happens in our life as an opportunity for us to show up as God.
To find a Unity church near you, visit unity.org.
Experts say picking up a pen and paper and writing things down can have some amazing benefits. Spark some creativity by sketching, doodling, and writing down what you want in life with a set of Unity Inspiration Notepads. They come in three inspirational designs with themes of gratitude, intention setting, and visualization. These are great tools to keep on your desk and use every day. Just $12.99 for a set of three. Pick up yours today at unityonline.org/shop.
Since 1924, Daily Word has offered inspiration and practical teachings through daily prayer messages to help people of all faiths live happy, healthy lives. The magazine includes 2 months of daily affirmations, messages, articles, and spiritual poetry to help you get inspired. Subscriptions are available for print editions in large type and Spanish, as well as the digital subscription package that includes the online magazine with audio, smartphone app, and daily email. Get your subscription today. Visit dailyword.com or unity.org.
Experience Everyday Peace with Dr. Drayvon James every Monday at 4 p.m. Central here on Unity Online Radio. In today's busy world, it's easy to get overwhelmed and disconnected. Tune in to the show for practical tips on how to handle whatever life throws at you. Dr. James welcomes some interesting guests and will help you get through any challenges you have with grace. Join the show live or listen later on demand right here on unityonlineradio.org.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
Welcome back to Main Street Vegan with your host, Victoria Moran.
Hello, my friends. It is such an honor and a privilege to be speaking with you this hour. I do want to invite you to visit the Main Street Vegan website, mainstreetvegan.net. The blog this week is from Deanna Myler, PhD, and it's called Managing Chronic Pain with a Vegan Diet. She's focusing particularly on endometriosis. So if that is of any interest, do take a look and also check out our film, a prayer for compassion. This is to interest people who identify as religious or spiritual in going vegan for the animals, for the planet, and for the body temple. So you can watch the trailer there. We're going to be having screenings all over everywhere. Going to be in London the 23rd of May at the Prince Charles Theater in Leicester Square. So if that's your part of the world or you know somebody there, please let them know about A Prayer for Compassion. And if you would like to show the film wherever you live, you can do that at absolutely no cost. Just be in touch. You can contact me through mainstreetvegan.net. So, Dr. Clapper, just talking about managing chronic pain, is that something that there's some pretty good evidence on with the plant-centered diet?
Yes, it's another one of those who'd have thunk. You know, nobody mentioned a thing about that to me in medical school, but absolutely, when people eat an animal-based diet and they load their tissues up with these omega-6 fats and these prostaglandins that are in the animal muscle, these are pro-inflammatory. These turn on inflammation, and they also stimulate the nerve endings that carry pain impulses. And now, one of the best things, and in fact, my left eyebrow no longer goes up even a quarter of an inch after a patient of mine who has gone to a plant-based diet said, you know, my joints stopped hurting. Yeah, I don't wake up all sore in the morning anymore. And I'll say, yep, that's right, because the makeup of their entire body's tissues has changed, and those pain-signaling molecules really recede. And absolutely, it's, I can't say, you know, if you've got a bad lumbar disc or something that is pushing on a nerve, or you got a broken arm. I mean, that's a mechanical issue that needs to be fixed. But if it's that low-grade inflammatory pain that people have, that frequently gets better on a vegan diet, absolutely.
Oh, that's wonderful. So when you're working with patients, you are a medical doctor, mm-hmm. and medical doctors use drugs and surgical procedures mm-hmm. for the most part to help people. And yet when I, as a layperson, look out at the world, particularly people in our age group, I mean, they're just eating pills the way people who don't like how their breath smells eat Tic Tacs. What is going on with this?
Oh, my. A couple of things is going on. This is the manifestation of some untruths, if I must say. Certainly our diet, as I mentioned, an animal-based diet full of sugar and animal muscle is a pro-inflammatory diet that generates a lot of diseases, for sure. And many of these have a lot of pain involved. But more than that, this type of standard American diet causes real diseases, real diabetes, real clogged arteries, real autoimmune diseases. And my colleagues, bless them, it's stunning to me. It's eye-watering, as they say in New Zealand, that doctors practice medicine like what their patients are eating has no effect on these diseases. And it's stunning, because the truth is, and as I go around to the medical schools and talk to the young students, you know, I say, you know, we've been treating diet like Voldemort in the Harry Potter movies, you know, the name that must not be spoken. Ooh, don't ask about what the patient's eating. We're Americans. We can eat whatever we want. Yes, I tell them, ask what the patient's eating. That's why the person sitting in front of you, obese and diabetic and clogged up and hypertensive and inflamed, because of what they're running through their body tissues every few hours. It's the food. It's the food. It's the food. And I tell them, before you order another $1,000 scan and another $500 panel blood test, stop. Ask them what they ate yesterday. Have them take you through their typical eating day. And if it's full of burgers and buffalo wings and pepperoni pizzas, that's the issue. Stop right there. Make it clear to them that's the source of their disease. Send them to the plant-based dietitian down the hall. Let that dietitian take them shopping, explain what needs to be in their freezer, et cetera. and see the patient back in a month and see if they're feeling better. That's how medicine needs to be practiced. But because doctors aren't taught about nutrition, they have contempt for it. They think it's a sissy science. It's not real medicine. And plus, the doctors are eating it themselves. They're eating their pizzas and their burgers and the steaks and the lobsters. They're not going to tell their patients not to eat it. And for those three reasons, they let their patients eat this pathogenic diet. And when the patient gets inflamed and their arteries clogged, all they know, well, let's give them an anti-inflammatory for their pain. Let's give them a statin to lower their cholesterol. Let's poison their liver enzymes that make their own cholesterol. And they're refusing to get to the bottom of the problem. It's the food. It's the diet. And because of that, it's almost a willful ignorance at this point on the part of my colleagues that the you know, it's stunning to me that medical science can recognize a genetic mismatch on gene A21 on chromosome 14. Boy, that we can identify with precision. But the thought that cheeseburgers and pepperoni pizzas are clogging up our patients' arteries, this is somehow too abstruse for my colleagues to understand. And it's not funny anymore. And without being obnoxious and aggressive, I'm angry at my profession. It's embarrassing to be a doctor and to practice medicine as if our patient's diet is not the driving force. After all this time, we know more than that now. And in fact, I show a slide to the medical students from the Statement of Ethics in the American Medical Association. The physician shall keep abreast of the latest advances in medical science and share this information with our patients. We are mandated to tell our patients, clean up your diet. And yet my colleagues refuse to learn this. So it's dreadful. It's a tragedy because real patients are dying on real operating tables from operations on their arteries that they really don't need, that they could melt that plaque away with a plant-based diet. We now know that. And to withhold this information from our patients is unethical. And I mean that word intentionally, as the Statement of Ethics tells us. It's unethical to withhold this from our patients any longer. So that's why we've started our Moving Medicine Forward initiative to go around to the medical schools. And I give those young students the lecture I wish somebody had given me 50 years ago. It would have changed every diagnosis I made, every treatment plan I recommended. And I tell them, you want to be a happy physician? I'm the happiest doctor I know. My patients get healthy. And that's, isn't that why you went into medicine? And I show a slide with all the major diseases that doctors treat, high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, clogged arteries, autoimmune disease. And I put a big red word across it, reversible. Every one of these is reversible diseases. They all go away on a plant-based diet. And then I put up a fairly inflammatory statement right across that same list. And I look out at my audience, my colleagues, which I love and honor, but that line on the across these diseases, and it comes out of my lips. Do you want to heal these patients or don't you? I mean, why did you go into medicine? You want to heal these people or don't you? What are you doing? If you don't really want to heal them and get to the root of their problem, then you're enabling their disease. You're part of their problem. You want to heal them, then get real about why they're sitting in front of you with this disease. And it's the standard Western meat and dairy-based diet. And if you get them on a whole food plant-based diet, most of these diseases go away. And you need to know that, young students. So that's what I've been sharing with my patients and with my colleagues. The students are really open to it. Some of the professors in the back with their arms folded, not so much. But the heck out with them. They're trying to hold back the tide. And my noble profession's a bottleneck in this sweeping change of awareness that has to go through our society. The politicians need to open to this. The pharmaceutical folks and the doctors certainly do, and our whole food system has to. And I can at least work on the theater of the medical profession, and hopefully I can free up this bottleneck. And you know, where doctors, of course, ask about what their patients are eating. And of course they know that plant-based diets will heal these diseases. If I get to that point, I can hang up my stethoscope, a happy physician.
Well, if you want to know more about Dr. Clapper's Moving Medicine Forward program, go to his website, drclapper.com. You spell doctor out, and Clapper is K-L-A-P-E-R. You can read all about it, and you can actually help support it. Think what a good feeling that would be to know that you were part of helping these young doctors about to go out into practice know that plants are the way to go.
Yes, so, thank you for mentioning it. Yes, so the website is doctorklaper.com. And yes, people are certainly more than welcome to make a financial donation. But I also, on the bottom right-hand corner of that webpage, and again, go to my website, click on Moving Medicine Forward, go to that webpage, and on the bottom right-hand corner, there's a little blue panel that says, if you know a medical student or someone on the faculty of a medical school who'd be open to Dr. Clapper coming to their school and giving a lecture, please click here and give us their contact information. We will contact them and arrange an appearance at their medical school. So invite people to go to Moving Medicine Forward on my website. Thank you.
Wonderful. Oh, that's exciting. And maybe you'll come to New York and I'll be
Absolutely.
Able to come in as an outside observer.
Oh, you'd be more than welcome.
You talk about all this great stuff that happens when people start eating this way, and yet I don't think a week goes by, certainly not a month, that some celebrity who was vegan for a while says something like, I had a bite of meat and it was as if my whole body awakened. And it's not just celebrities. Other people say these things. What is going on there?
Right. I, of course, hear that as well. And I think what's going on has to do with how we raise our children. And if you think about it, at age 6 months, the baby is still nursing at the breast or nursing from the bottle. And with all the love in the parent's heart, your mother didn't know, my mother didn't know, nobody knew back then. But at age 6 months of age, that bottle, that jar of baby lamb, baby chicken, baby turkey is opened. And from that point on, three times a day, animal flesh is slathered on that child's intestinal tract, all through infancy, through childhood, through adolescence, through puberty, through their teen years, their 20s, their 30s. Well, you eat animal flesh three times a day for 20 years, 30 years, your body will become dependent upon it. The mucus lining in the intestinal tract will be the best mucus for absorbing nutrients from this high fat, high protein, high sugar, low fiber food stream. Your liver enzymes will set up to be the most efficient for dealing with this cholesterol containing high protein, high fat, high sugar food stream. The microbiome in your gut that you will spawn will be the result of carnitine, creatine coming into the intestine three times a day. You sort of make some nasty organisms appear if you do that, but people do. And the body, very importantly, makes these muscle-related nutrients. We all make carnitine, we all make creatine, we all make myoglobin in our muscles. And we have the enzymes to do that. But if you're eating meat three times a day, as we in the West do, well, these molecules, the carnitine and creatine, are coming through the body every few hours, preformed since infancy. Well, what's the body going to do? We can make it ourselves, but if it's coming in the bloodstream three times a day, your genes are going to downregulate. They're going to reduce their own production of these molecules because the body doesn't want to make too much carnitine. It'll spawn some nasty molecules. So we downregulate our production of these muscle-related molecules because they're coming in preformed three times a day. Then, however, at age 30 or whatever, the person sees Forks Over Knives, they read John Robbins' book, they listen to Main Street Vegan, and they adopt a plant-based diet. Well, now everything's got to change. They've done 180 degrees change on their food stream. Instead of high in fat, it's low in fat. Instead of low in fiber, it's high in fiber. And very importantly, all those preformed muscle-related nutrients gone. Now you got to make your own right now. Most folks are able to gear up their enzymes and make their own carnitine, creatine, myoglobin. But some folks, Those dreams have been turned darn near off for 30 years, 40 years. And some of these folks have a hard time getting the enzymatic machinery going in the engine room there of their cells. And they just limp along with barely sufficient levels of some of these nutrients. And they may do some physical activity, whatever, draw down on nutrients, they don't feel so good. And then they eat some meat. And this preformed carnitine, creatine, myoglobin floods through their tissues. And whoa, they feel great. Wow, vegan schmegan, man, I'm a carnivore, give me my meat. But what have we witnessed? This is not normal human physiology. This is an acquired dependency created by feeding a human infant animal flesh three times a day since infancy. No other primate does this. No gorilla does this. No bonobo does this. No orangutan does this. And we didn't used to either, but we sure do now. We create this dependency upon animal flesh. And those folks who fall down below their levels of synthesizing these own nutrients, when they eat some meat, they feel better. But again, this is I hate to use the word addiction, but on some level, it really is the true definition of an addiction, in that addiction is the regular ingestion of a substance that, when it is not ingested, causes physical withdrawal symptoms. Well, is that not what we are witnessing here? You know, you create this true addiction on meat. And so the person is dealing with this. And I have great compassion, because they didn't know and their mother didn't know. But what do these folks do? I tell these folks, they may need, as they make this transition, they may not be able to stop the meat all at once. They may have to eat a small piece on Sunday and coast on that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, till they may need a little more and take another little piece again, a medicinal amount, the smallest amount their body can need, less than the size of a deck of playing cards, small amount. And take, ingest this medicinally and slowly increase the interval of time in between each of these dosages till eventually they gear up their enzymatic system so they don't need it anymore. They just wean themselves off and taper off. But we created some official dependencies here, and we're dealing with the metabolic karma of this very bizarre way to raise a human infant, which is a plant-eating creature. We raised them as a carnivore, and this is the echoes of that 30 years later. And so I think we're looking at this acquired dependency, because who doesn't? Never says this kind of, I eat meat to feel better. Never says the people who've been raised as vegans since birth. Now, your daughter Adair, she's not going to be saying this. She's a different biochemical creature because she was raised like human infants should be raised on plant-based materials. And so that's the real issue here. So I have compassion for these people. They're not deceiving us. They're victims of this phenomenon, and they got to do the best they can with it. And if they need to ingest it from time to time, I don't condemn them, but I encourage them to wean themselves off as expeditiously as possible.
I wish they all had access to you, because you know what they do. They don't have a little piece every now and then. They go paleo.
They do. And they hurt themselves badly when they do that, not to mention the animals that they eat on the planet. But it hurts them. We are not carnivorous apes. And these folks are setting themselves up, the paleo folks and the keto folks, for an epidemic of colon cancer and clogged arteries and autoimmune disease and dementia. This is a diet of death. And I've already seen my first colon cancer in a paleo woman. And when those journal articles start coming out, paleo diet associated with colon cancer, paleo diet associated with stroke, paleo diet associated with lupus, my left eyebrow won't go up that much, because I'll say, yep, that's right. That's what you get. You put diesel fuel in a gasoline-burning engine, you can't be surprised when the fuel line clogs up and the spark plugs fall. It's the wrong fuel. And we are not carnivorous apes. They feel better at first because the paleo folks don't eat dairy or flour products or oils. Yay, those are all fine things to do without. And when you stop those things, people get leaner. The weight loss helps their lipid numbers go down. It makes their diabetes tolerance, that makes their glucose tolerance better. So they feel good for the first 6 months or a year. But you keep packing that colon full of meat 3 times a day, month after month, year after year. That's a great way to give yourself a colon cancer. As I said, I've already seen my first one here, and it won't be the last. So I urge your listeners, if they have gone paleo, get off that train. It's going to take you to places you don't want to go.
Thank you. And that is the best explanation I have ever heard for what these people go through. Because I think as a vegan, you know, lots of us just want to roll our eyes like, how hard is it? But you have explained sometimes it is really hard, and we need to be able to have some compassion for that.
Yeah,
hopefully things will be changing.
Indeed.
So you spent several years at True North Health working with Dr. Goldhammer, supervising a lot of water fasts. And I know these are extended fasts that are done supervised for healing of pathology. We also hear a lot right now about intermittent fasting, which I think is just taking more time between meals. But we think of that as kind of coming from the paleo world. But you say there's something that vegans could learn from that, too.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know where the paleo folks come off claiming intermittent fasting for themselves. Let's be biologists here. I'm sure a million years ago, literally on the African savannas, our foraging bands of ancestors, there would be frequently 4, 5, 6 days would go by before you found that next berry bush with fruit on it. And intermittent fasts of 4, 5, 6 days on water only were probably the rule. And our body learned how to slip into this amazing gear of just burning stored fats and going into ketosis. And wonderful things happen. 4 or 5 days in ketosis once a month is a beautiful thing to do when the body repairs itself, cleans itself out on a cellular level. That's wonderful. So I'm a big fan of intermittent fasting. Start with just 1 day or 2 days on water and no more than 5 days unsupervised if you're healthy. You're not on insulin or you have severe medical problems. But if you're a healthy person, intermittent fasting is 3 to 5 days on water once a month. Now, that's different to what you were implying here, where people change the hours in which they eat. And they will get up in the morning. Instead of having breakfast, they'll just drink water till noon, do their eating from noon to 6, and then go back on water only. So they confine their eating to just 6 hours of the day. That's been called intermittent fasting, but it's really not. It's not a true fast in that way. You don't go into ketosis. The proper term is time-restricted feeding, TRF. And it's a good thing to do because that when we're sleeping, we're not eating, and we wake up in the morning, start tending towards that fasting state. And already good changes are happening in our body. It's a way to kind of nudge ourselves toward the fasting state. But again, you don't really fast because you start eating at noon. So time-restricted feeding, it's a lovely thing to do. We all eat too much. And those hours not spent eating, good tissue repair is happening in your body. So if you'd like to explore time-restricted feeding and just eat from noon to 6 or 7 in the evening, that's a wonderful thing to do, and I'm a big fan of that as well.
How about juicing?
Juicing is okay if you don't want to do a water fast. Now we're talking about a vegetable-based juice. This is a green juice with just a little bit of apple or carrot, so it doesn't taste like lawn clippings. This is not fruit juice. Don't deluge your body with a lot of fructose here. This is juiced greens, as I said, with a little bit of apple or carrot in it. And that's a lovely thing to do for 3 days, 5 days. I'm a big fan of juicing. And those folks who are on medicines, they can't stop. If they're on the thyroid or prednisone or SSRIs, those folks shouldn't water fast, but that's a great use for those juice cleanses. And so I'm a big fan of that as well.
I love how you talk about this way of life, Dr. Clapper, that it's a celebration. You talk about these things as being a lovely thing to do.
Absolutely.
Not like I prescribe this. So just in our last minute, tell me about a lovely life.
Oh, a lovely life is one where your food and activity has created a body that is lean and healthy and takes you where you want to go without pain or shortness of breath. And that lets you get on with the real business of life. And that is to love and to serve and to laugh and to learn and to make people around you as happy as possible, because that's how you'll get as happy as possible. We're not here to suffer. We're here to love and serve and learn and and laugh. And that to me is a lovely life, and a healthy body lets you do that.
Well, you have inspired the heck out of me. So listeners, if you know a medical student, if you know anybody who has anything to do with a medical school, let them know about Michael Klepper, MD, doctor, spell it out, klepper.com, and we will put that and all of his URLs in the show notes at mainstreetvegan.net, so that any doctor that you go to 10 years from now will be telling you the great stuff that we're hearing today from Dr. Michael Klepper. Michael, I absolutely adore you, your lovely wife, your incredible message, your radiant spirit. Thank you so much for being part of the show today. And thank you for being part of my life for the past 35 years. You rock. Everybody else, thank you so very much for listening. I hope that you are just as bursting with inspiration as I feel right now. Thanks to Unity Online Radio for being there for us for almost 8 years. God bless you. Eat your veggies.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Do you ever feel that calling that you should be doing more with your life? If you're unhappy with the status quo, I can help. My name is Elias Patras, and I'm an intuitive motivator, psychic medium, and motivational speaker. I know that feeling, and on my podcast, Your Inner Voice, I can help you answer that call to step into your life's purpose. I will show you how to recognize and listen to the signs and signals that are all around us and help you tap into your intuition. Join me for the show here on the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network and wherever you get your podcasts. Let's connect, educate, and grow on this journey together.